Reconciliation is everyone's business. When Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission issued its 94 calls to action, number 92 called on the private sector to improve Indigenous participation in our economy. It called on businesses to do their part. This podcast is about responding to call number 92 and what you can do to make a difference. Reconciliation. Conversation. Action. Welcome to UN92, sponsored by Farm Credit Canada, Zastel, Morris Interactive, and K+S Potash Canada.
It's time to create some traction. No more words, let's get to action. In the shimmering lights we start. Great ideas to make a spark. It's UN92.
Here's your host, Julianne Riston.
Welcome, listeners. We are speaking today with Nick Creighton, the Executive Director of the Indigenous Manufacturing and Contracting Network. Welcome, Nick Creighton, to the UN92 podcast. Thanks for joining us today to have a conversation about how business can answer the call of reconciliation TRC 92.
Thank you for having me. I'm appreciative of the opportunity to talk a little bit about something that I'm super passionate about, and that's Indigenous engagement, truth and reconciliation on a very large level.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? So in good Indigenous fashion, where are you from?
I am from Waterhen Lake First Nation, which is just north of Meadow Lake, Saskatchewan. Some people might know where that is, small town up in northern Saskatchewan. And but I've lived in Regina now for, 18 years. I've had the opportunity to work in public, the private, the nonprofit sector, all around Indigenous engagement. And it's something I had mentioned, I'm very passionate about, I enjoy, and I see tons of benefits coming from. And I always want to give the opportunity for young Indigenous voices to have a platform or have their voices be heard and kind of lead that charge. So,
Nice. You definitely have a pretty unique vantage point in terms of your background and experience, and definitely have been one of those folks leading the way and creating the path for businesses to get on board and do some of this good work of change. I think, you know, we're probably a change generation right now watching all of this happen. So I'm, you know, we're always happy to see people pushing fast and hard forward as long as that door is open for us. I'm interested in your perspectives on the small and medium business community. So that's what we're thinking about today through the Saskatoon Chamber of Commerce. Why are they so important? Why is that business community so important to economic reconciliation?
Well, I believe the small and medium businesses make up over 90% of our economy in Saskatchewan, right? Everybody knows of the large industry, natural resource companies that are often highlighted, but they don't really talk about the smaller shops out there that are actually running our economy. And so why I think it's important for small and medium businesses to kind of get on board with truth and reconciliation is that they actually can actually even be more agile. They have smaller teams, and so they can make decisions a lot faster than some of those larger worldwide corporations. And they can identify what their capacity is, right? And for me, when it comes to truth and reconciliation, especially in the business community, I always try to inform companies on how you can focus your efforts. Because that term, truth and reconciliation, 94 calls to action, you know, the calls to justice for missing, murdered Indigenous women and girls, or the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples, already people who have done tangible things to say, this is the direction you can go. Now, how can you focus that energy and what's within your capacity? So before I tell people go down that journey, I always ask them to do an individual, take a look at your own household, take a look at your own personal journey when it comes to truth and reconciliation. What is your responsibility? It's famously said, truth and reconciliation begins at that kitchen table. Right? What kind of conversations are you having at home? What are you going to be having during those holiday events where you have, you, all of us have, you know, if you're fortunate to have extended family come to your family gatherings, you have a loud family member, maybe an uncle or an auntie that has a really strong opinion on Indigenous people as a whole. Mm-hmm. That could be your opportunity to have those kinds of conversations and help in a good way explain some of the challenges that are going on. But I think it's important because there is some agility with those small and medium businesses, and they can really ask, maybe recruitment isn't their issue. Maybe they're completely staffed up. Maybe they run a family-owned cafe or a restaurant, and recruitment isn't something that they're necessarily focused on. And so then what I tell people is like, okay, what can you do besides that? Yes, we can participate in Orange Shirt Day. Yeah, you can help and celebrate First Nations culture during the month of June. It's starting off with saying what's within my capacity and setting small goals and saying, okay, we want to do more community engagement. We want to volunteer. We want to learn more about it. Maybe you can have a session where you're doing a lunch and learn and you're just watching, you know, We Were Children and then having a discussion about it, or watching some episodes of Contact, the APTN episode of Contact, right? And where they take, I think, 6 or 8 outspoken Canadians, and they take them on a 28-day journey on about different communities. So I think it's important. I think they can be agile, and they can, when small and medium businesses start leading that charge, big companies start getting on board. They start to notice and saying, well, we have this capacity. We have a marketing team. We have A, B, and C. And so when small and medium businesses start doing those little things, then I think others start taking a look in that direction as well and saying, we have a larger budget. We have more people that we can work with, and we can mobilize as well. So, like I said, I think it's important. I think, like I said, initially start that journey at home with yourself, see what's within your capacity, and don't get overwhelmed. That's the big thing. Don't get overwhelmed with saying, oh man, I'm not doing this or I'm not doing this. Really, really research ways on how you can be an ally. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where you can start is find out what's going to work best for me, and see if your company's even interested. That's the thing, right? If you're just sitting there and you're pushing an agenda and you're getting pushed back, maybe that's something you're in a situation where you're like, you know what? My company's not going in this direction, but I can take it upon myself, my family, my circle, and we can go out and engage the community. We can do community engagement in this way. Mm-hmm. And then reaching out to different organizations. There are so many Indigenous organizations popping up left, right, and center. So talk to those nonprofit groups and talk to those friendship centers, and you can get so many connections and resources that are out there. Mm-hmm. So
I appreciate that insight a lot. I'm sure that you've done a lot of deep dive work with companies that have come in kind of starting from the bare basics, starting from scratch and wanting to build plans on how they can engage in this space. So thinking about the small and medium sized business community, those small shops, you know, we're talking in that 1 to 25, 50 people, and they're wanting to do something, and it gets pretty intimate pretty quick. And I'm sure you've heard this more than once. Like, we need some kind of checklist. Can you speak to that easy button, that request of, you know, I just have this small shop and I just want to do something good. Do you have like a checklist? Can you speak about that conversation? I'm sure you've had it a number of times.
Well, that's the thing, is there isn't necessarily an easy button, and I understand what you're saying, but it all starts with having conversations. Like, maybe you need to do a little with that small of a group. Let's say maybe you do an anonymous survey, because people don't want to feel like there's a lot of pressure on them to come up with ideas or answers. And the cool thing about it is that there's tons of resources. So start by asking Alexa, asking Siri, asking Google, whoever. Just Google, how can I be an ally, or ways to be an ally? I promise you will find tons of information out there. How can I be an ally to the Indigenous community? Mm-hmm. What does that look like? And then you can take that information and say, okay, well, we can do this. We have the capacity to do this. It's that, like I had said before, it's doing that discovery. And if you're a small shop, you can be mobile. You're like, okay, well, maybe for Orange Shirt Day, we're going to paint the outside of our steps this color and do something unique to us to show that you're welcoming when that Indigenous customer comes walking by and they say, oh, these guys actually know what's going on. Mm-hmm. I promise you, Indigenous people, even showing, okay, I'll give you an example. I was very fortunate. My wife bought me a trip to London, not London, Ontario, like London, England. And it was during the time of Standing Rock, back in 2016. It was the height of the the United States election, and Standing Rock was going on, and they were, you know, going against the Dakota Access Pipeline. And when I was in London, there was a sign just outside this record shop, and it showed, "We stand in support and solidarity with Standing Rock." And you could, and to me, I was like, that for me, it was enough of a, that's cool. Like it made, it was enough for me to just walk in there and have a conversation with people from London that may not have had other people walk in, but that showing that visual support outside your shop, that, that this is who you are about as an organization, this is what we believe in, and we're ready to have those courageous conversations. Even let's say you're a little local shop, let's say you're a cafe and you have an AV system, maybe you start reaching out to local Indigenous artists and have them do like a set up all of their artwork in your place and have them talk about their experience as an artist, bring in a subject matter expert to talk about truth and reconciliation, invite a residential school survivor and to share with just the people there and promote young Indigenous voices, especially the artists, the people in the art scene. There's so much momentum happening with young people and getting that information out and then sharing it with the public. You know this, Julianne, that once you get people and you start talking to them, or they come up to you and they show some interest in whatever you were discussing, whether it be economic reconciliation, whether it be residential schools, you can hook them in. And then you, and then if you provide a little bit of value, like, oh, here's some resources, why don't you check out Reconciliation Saskatoon? Why don't you check out Reconciliation Saskatchewan? I was just in Lloydminster yesterday. Why don't you check out Reconciliation Lloydminster? Why don't you check out Reconciliation PA or Regina or whatever? There's a calendar of events that you can tap into. The library has tons of resources on truth and reconciliation. Most libraries now, I know the city of Saskatoon, and I haven't been there yet, but they've created a section that's Indigenous specific on TRC. And same with the library at the city of Regina, where they have that capacity. There's tons of things that these small businesses can do, and they're, and get creative with it. It's just about bringing out awareness and making people feel inclusive. And I think that's an important aspect, right? Is that quite often, you know, everybody wants to live a good life. They want to, if they have kids, they want their kids to grow up and grow and be smart and be inclusive and all of those things. We all have a lot of the same core values. It's starting to have those conversations and see how we can kind of work together with this. That's the goal with it, is that we work together and we come up with solutions together. And we also be patient, because everybody's on a different path too, right? Because reconciliation, people are rushing to that. I want to reconcile super hard. but the reality is some people might be stuck in truth, and that's okay. We're all at a different place. There are people that are stuck, not stuck, but they might just be at that truth space and they want people to know the truth. And it's okay to learn the truth, right? In Germany, it is mandatory in elementary and like primary, elementary and secondary school for them to learn about the atrocities that happened in Germany, right? With World War II and stuff like that, the Holocaust. In Canada, we don't have it mandatory to teach about residential schools. It's not, right? And there's a real fear around that. But I remember, and I can't remember the elder who said this, an elder or a knowledge keeper who said this. They said, especially in schools, they said it happened to children. So why wouldn't we teach it to children? Children are most vulnerable. And at that age, they're not jaded. And they know when a child speaks up and says, this is wrong, they know that difference between right and wrong. They know that that's unfair. And so they can mobilize as a young generation. And this, as you know, Julianne, this younger generation, they demand being heard. You know, you and I, potentially, our parents, right? You remember, you can go back in time, right? We're having an adult conversation. You go up and you sit there and you bug them and they're like, go and play. Or you have a thought and you're like, oh, they just said something. All they tell you is that, no, this is an adult conversation. I try and tell my kids that. They're like, no, I have a voice. I have an opinion. I want to be heard. My opinion matters. And the end of the day, that is the reality, is they're going to be in charge of us. And so mm-hmm. they should have a voice. They should be able to share how they're feeling, and they're going to provide you with a different perspective and maybe mm-hmm. a less jaded perspective. So
we talk about having courageous conversations, and, you know, I truly do believe that laughter is medicine. I really do believe that. And people are afraid to kind of strip away some of the performativeness about, you know, stepping into the space of economic reconciliation and truth and reconciliation. They're heavy topics. But, you know, I think when we can strip some of that out and accept that we're meeting each other where we are, it opens the door to have, you know, really interesting dialogue. And I'm curious about, you know, when people say, I'm afraid to say something stupid, or I'm afraid to ask a stupid question, which I truly believe there is no such thing. I'm wondering if you can share with us any particular humorous moments or anecdotes you may have from your journey on this path with businesses and with people, and some of the things that you've heard people want to ask or say.
My favorite is an audience with their arms crossed. Because then that for me excites me. I'm like, yes, you were forced to come here today and you're not excited about this training. And for me, that gives me an opportunity to kind of lean in a little bit more and hopefully push that boundary. I always tell people, we don't shame or blame. I was never taught that way. You know, it's not about drawing a line or a split screen and saying, you're on that side. This isn't a debate. This isn't law school where we're having moot court. The reality is we don't shame or blame. The goal is to make people feel confident to be able to ask those questions, because people haven't had the opportunity to learn. I've been very fortunate in my life to take Indigenous awareness training. And I'll tell you how that started. Many years ago, I worked at the Rancho Society, and somebody was delivering Indigenous awareness training, and there's a non-Indigenous person, and I felt really uncomfortable. This will have a point to this story. Don't worry, Julianne. And so I felt really uncomfortable. I was sitting in that there and I took the training. It was part of our orientation, right? And being Indigenous, First Nations, whatever, I was sitting there and there was so much tension in the room. And this white guy was blaming the white man for everything. The white man did this, he stole the land, and they cheated on the treaties, and it was just like, it wasn't a welcoming learning environment. And it was something that I was like, shit, I'm the only, I think, Indigenous person in this room. And there's going to be I felt like a lot of pressure as a young, you know, 22-year-old at the time, 22-year-old. Like, shit, I didn't like the position that I'm in. And I'm here for 4 hours having to listen to this white guy tell me about history. It doesn't have to, like, the white guy part of it. I just felt like he was really dividing the room, and he was just, the blame's on this, and Indigenous people need to be respectful. Even before he started the presentation, take your hat off. All of these messed up ideas about, like, Indigenous culture and traditions. And so I started writing notes, and I was like, this guy can't be in charge of this. I was like, I have to take this over or do something given my role, or I have to mention it. And then I moved on from that position. I still started doing Indigenous awareness training. And after one of my trainings at this place that I was working at, an older gentleman came up to me, and it was after the training. I had gone back to my office, and he came and knocked on my door, and he handed me a book. And it was like a history book on Indigenous history and knowledge. And he came in there and he came in with I'm so happy, you know, yeah, I'm so sorry for what my people did to your people. And I was like, oh, who are your people? Like, what do you mean your people? And he was like, I just was really touched by, you know, what happened. And I think, you know, if you read this history book written by this white author about, you know, the Indigenous people, and he really does an excellent job sharing his thoughts on history and where it went. So it was really funny to me, and I was gentle. I wasn't a jerk back to him. I made him feel like, I just nodded my head and smiled. And that has happened on numerous occasions. That one comes to mind to me, that somebody handing me a book on history after I just finished teaching it. It was hilarious. Like, you need to read this book that I found from the United States on the Great Western Plains and written by some, I have no idea. I just ended up throwing it on my thing, and I was like, I don't need to read a book. I was like, the funny thing about it, it was like from the 1960s. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I don't know why I even had it with him. I was like, you randomly had this book with you and you were so prompted and ready to hand me some knowledge. It was just a funny interaction. And that often happens. It often happens. And I try to make it humorous, just like you had mentioned. I can't share enough is that that is our way of healing. We talk about our trauma as Indigenous people. We talk about trauma freely. And if you and I, Julie, were in the same room and we are standing together and a non-Indigenous, we could be potentially talking about residential schools and laughing about it, right? Mm-hmm. Or something, making a joke or saying something. But for us, that's okay to make those jokes and laugh because it's a way we're healing from our trauma, mm-hmm. whatever that trauma looks like. And humor is a very important piece to how we lift each other up, but also how we make each other feel. And it's the best way to deal with trauma, I think, is through laughter and humor. And that's where I find my most growth happens, when I'm standing around my friends and family and people that I care about, when we're discussing difficult topics and somebody throws a joke in and then it just derails the entire conversation, but we're all laughing, mm-hmm. but it's a memorable experience, right? So that one book, that guy came up to me and offered me some, a word of advice. And he was sorry about his people did to my people. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I was like, I have a climate controlled house. I have clean drinking water. I'm pretty privileged. I said, so, you know, for what it's worth, thanks. Guess. I have no idea.
Thank you.
Yeah. But I always try to remind people, you don't have to pay for the sins. Like, this white guilt comes in, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't have to pay for the sins of your ancestors. You didn't do it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that you should forget it. And it doesn't mean that you don't have a responsibility to share that knowledge. And you have a role to play as an ally, as a settler, as somebody who can say, you know what, I have a voice. I have a voice that can stand up. I have the privilege to hear somebody and call it out. Because we all know, I have you as well. You know people that are have light skin and have been in rooms with other white people, Caucasian people, and they've heard something racist happening, assuming that everybody else was white. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you have that privilege and you have that ability to call out race somewhere, it is in a good way, in a kind way, where you're not shaming them or making it too uncomfortable, but you're pulling them aside. There's ways to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Thank you to Nick for joining us. We have so much more to talk about. He is a wealth of knowledge. We're going to split this particular episode into two. So hoping to see you all back here to hear more from Nick.
This has been You in 92 with your host, Julianne Riston, produced by the Greater Saskatoon Chamber of Commerce. Thank you to our sponsors, Farm Credit Canada, SaskTel, Morris Interactive, and K+S Potash Canada. Visit youand92.ca for more resources and information, including the Chamber's step-by-step reconciliation roadmap for small business and past editions of this podcast. Connect with the Saskatoon Chamber anytime at saskatoonchamber.com or through social media using the handle @thechamberyxe.
It's time to create some traction. No more words, let's get to action. In the shimmering lights we start. Great ideas to make a spark. It's UN92.
Theme song by Lancelot Knight. Produced at Sound Lounge by T-Bone.